නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස So as you all know, we are discussing Brahmajala Sutta, which is the very first sutta in the Digha Nikaya, and already we have discussed part of it. And basically, if I briefly summarize what we did, so there was an occasion that Buddha and the Sangha were traveling from Rajagaha to Nalanda. It's a long distance, and at that time, two others are also accompanying them. One is called Suppiya, he's a wandering ascetic, and his student was called Brahmadatta. And while on the way, actually Suppiya was criticizing the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. On the other hand, Brahmadatta, his student, is trying to safeguard or to protect, and he's praising the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. And Buddha and the Sangha actually stayed on the way, stayed one night at another place, and during that place also, while they are in that place also, these two people have accompanied. The situation was the same. The next day, actually, when Sangha gathered, so there was a sort of discussion among them. So Buddha has properly mentioned about the different viewpoints in people's mind, how people get trapped or tangled in various viewpoints. Accordingly, they sometimes follow that suit, and some others who are very much like to that sort of view, they also join. So likewise, people get together depending on their views, their kind of attitude even. And then Buddha came to the discussion, and there he highlighted that when others are disparaging or sort of criticizing, blaming towards him or to the teaching or to the Sangha, so one should not get really upset, one should not get really panicked, disappointed. Rather, one should listen to the situation, and properly one has to give a comment if necessary, that the things what they have mentioned is either true or false. These things are correct, these things are wrong. So likewise, one has to peacefully make a comment. And on the other hand, if someone is praising, again Buddha requests the Sangha not to get elated, not to get highlighted, rather again maintain a peaceful mind and try to give a proper comment, because the praise could be an exaggeration or it may be based on some false ground. So one has to properly analyze, think, and if it is really available in the Sangha, available in the Dhamma and the Buddha, so then Buddha say, okay, you can admit it, accept it. But on the other hand, if things are exaggerated, again you can deny it. So here Buddha requests the Sangha to maintain their peace of mind rather than emotionally interact, impulsively attack. So Buddha's approach was quite peaceful. So that's why the Buddhism, even after centuries, has become a kind of a peaceful religion. But things might change. Time to time, things are changing. Anyway, Buddha as the founder, so basically as the teacher, he has given certain universal teachings. And again, whoever interested are invited to participate, invited to practice, and they themselves can become mostly peaceful. Therefore, it is leading towards the peace. And on the other hand, Buddha now highlighting that the typical uninstructed worldlings are highlighting him, praising him for mere moral conduct. So he get on to explain all descriptions about the moral conduct, the Vinaya, particularly even that is common to the higher ordained monks. And the point highlighted there is that these things are certainly trivial points. It is not worthy of mentioning even. Telling that Buddha does not kill animals or steal or involve with sexual misconduct, don't lie. So these are obvious in a way. So he didn't consider those are kind of very important, sublime kind of qualities. It doesn't mean that he sort of looked down the moral conduct. Rather, he kept moral conduct as his basis. But that is not the main point to be praised. So these are very much like obvious. And then he get on to explain 62 kind of wrong views. So those are the kind of tangles, those are the kind of traps that people get caught up. Particularly the people who are having certain interest on the spiritual path. So we know that people are very less actually who have certain inclination towards the spiritual path, because vast majority are very much into the indulgence in the sensual activities. So they are into sense desires, sense gratification. So that is the vast majority are giving more priority. But on the other hand, certain others, maybe a less number, are interested of certain spiritual attainment or spiritual understanding, spiritual growth. But unfortunately, most of them are also ultimately get trapped in certain wrong views. So that's a kind of a pathetic situation, because then we can conclude, okay, vast majority of people are very much like trapped. That's a vast majority are basically into the sensual gratification, they also trapped in that. On the other hand, another group who even into the spirituality get trapped in the wrong views. So on such context, Buddha come to the world, and then he recognized all these different sides, and through his vast knowledge, so he was able to understand the peril in this situation, and he is basically giving a fair amount of fair account of information. So how people get trapped, so what are these wrong views, and he therefore give a sort of a complete view of wrong views, how they can arise and what are they. So here now we already discussed about 18 such wrong views. So those are somehow related with past lives. So Sasatavada, particularly talking about eternalism, where continuous existence of a soul is highlighted. And then Ekaccha Sasatavada basically highlights that certain part is eternal and certain others are not eternal. So that is another part. And then Antavada and Anantavada. So basically talks about the limitations of the world, whole universe. Completely infinite or it is finite. So accordingly they are called infinities or the finitids. And then Amaravikkhepavada, where people are talking of not talking of a proper teaching, rather they are very much like getting on to endless hedging, not giving a proper answer, not giving a direct answer. So they basically get on to a cunning way, somehow escape when someone is asking various questions. So there are four such possibilities, and that is also highlighted, explained by the Buddha. And each and every time Buddha particularly mentioned, all these are possibilities, all these are the ones with respect to, say for example, eternalism. Okay, these are the four particular eternalism, absolutely eternalism that people can talk. Nothing other than this. And when it comes to partly eternalism and partly non-eternalism, so these are the four possibilities, nothing other than that. And again, with respect to Amaravikkhepavada, so that is endless hedging, so that basically like irregulars, so there also he come up explained about four categories. Other than that, there is no more. And the last one is called Adicca Samuppannavada, where fortuitous arising is explained. So there are two possibilities that the Buddha explained there. So we all know about the Patissamuppada, the dependently arising nature. Dependently arising nature. So that is the teaching of the Buddha. But these people are talking the opposite. So the continuity of the world happens in a fortuitous manner. A kind of a by mere chance, things are happening by mere chance. So such two teachings are also mentioned in this respect, and therefore altogether there are 18 wrong views explaining about the past lives. To some extent there the past lives are involved. Now we are getting to the next part. So they are called aparanta kappika. So that is where some sort of involvement of the future lives are involved. So previous 18 actually touch to some extent the past lives. Now this one, this category, the last one, actually touches the future lives. Aparanta kappika, speculators about the future. Now santi bhikkhave ekai samana brahmana aparanta kappika aparantanu dittino aparantam arabba aneka vihitam adimutti padani abhivadanti chatu chattarisaya pattuni. So basically there are 44 altogether, there are 44 such wrong views where people speculate about the future. Accordingly, they come up with wrong views. Now, that is also divided into 5 categories. And we'll first discuss about the first category, where they are calling of conscious survival after death. So, after the death, so what's going to happen? So, they are going to somehow survive. Survive in the sense, a kind of a soul is there, and in the future, so that soul going to survive. And depending on whether it is conscious or non-conscious, sanyi or asanyi, now there are 2 categories, sanyi vada and asanyi vada. There are 16 such sanyi vada, where after the death a kind of conscious kind of survival is possible. And then certain other group are telling 8 such possibilities are there, non-conscious survival. Now if we get into certain information about this one, about the sanyivada, the Buddha say santi bhikkave eke samana brahmana uddamaghatanika sanyivada uddamaghatanang sanying attanam panyapinti solasahi vattuhi. So there are ones who are talking about doctrines. So basically after the death, it's a post-mortem survival. So after the death, so they are somehow going to survive. And depending on the possibilities, depending on their nature, there are 16 such types. The first one is they are declaring like there is a self after death, which is quite completely healthy, conscious and material. Material means it has certain amount of a rupa. Rupi atta hoti arogo parammarana sanyi nang panyapinti. So basically after the death there is somehow some sort of a soul exists, and it has certain shape, it has certain kind of a shape, a rupa, a form, and it is somewhat material, and again it is conscious, it has some conscious sanyi, certain perception, certain conscious, certain cognition is possible. And another group is telling okay, it is healthy, conscious, but it is immaterial, so there is no rupa. So that's another easily trapped wrong view, where certain kind of a soul is there, but it is not material, it is immaterial. You can't see it, you can't touch it, but it is the one going to survive after the death. And then both material and immaterial. Now these people, you can see how they are logically come up with various possibilities. Now different views are there when they are talking, so they come up with particularly 4 such possibilities. And accordingly, now here they are arguing, okay, the whatever the survived conscious soul, it is actually material as well as immaterial. So that's another group they are talking. Then the other group, actually, of course, they deny both material and immaterial. So they simply say neva rupi na arupi. So you can't say about the its form, it's formless, or its form with form. So it is neva rupi, no arupi. So likewise, they come up with four such conscious survival. And then this conscious survival, is it finite? Now it is it sort of experiencing finite world? Antava atta hoti. And again, this soul, is this soul has certain limit, has certain boundary. So depending on that, another group telling, okay, it's a finite atta, finite soul it is. And then another group say, no, it is infinite. Anantava atta hoti. So whatever the survived soul, going to be completely ananta, completely infinite. So we can imagine sort of it has certain links towards the Sasatavada also. So, but they are particularly not talking about the past lives. They are more concerned about the future survival. So the survived soul going to be kind of immense. It's going to be vast. It's going to be ananta. It's going to be infinite. So that is their teaching. Now, as you can see, depending on the situation, now another group arguing, no, it is both finite and infinite. So when they are saying, okay, it is finite and infinite, so they, that group particularly reject the other side. So that means they particularly reject the group who are telling it is finite, and they also reject the group they are saying infinite, because they believe it is both finite as well as infinite. So that's another group, that's the seventh group. And the opposite is also there, another group saying, okay, this is neither finite nor infinite. So this particular soul is neither finite nor infinite. So you can't talk about its possibility. So they are talking of such possibility. So all these are, by the way, conscious. The survived soul is conscious. And then ekatta sanyatta hoti. So when it is being survived, so they have certain some single conscious perception. They are conscious, but with some single perception. They have certain single perception. So their view is, or their perception is onto one direction. So that is one. That is what another group is talking. So depending on the perception, there are four such categories. So you can understand what are the four. So one is telling it is uniform perception. Another one is telling, no, it is nanatta sanyi. That means a varied kind of perception. So another group saying it is limited perception. So it has certain limited perception. It has certain boundary. So it, that particular survived conscious soul has limited perception. Another group saying it is having unlimited perception. Appamana sanyi. Paritta sanyi and appamana sanyi. Paritta sanyi is kind of a limited, very narrow kind of perception. On the other hand, other group saying, no, it is completely vast, unlimited kind of perception. And how about the feeling? So feeling is either ekanta sukhi, utterly happy, wholly happy, continuously happy. So this soul which is going to be survived after death, going to be utterly happy, completely happy. So that is one group's belief. Another one telling, okay, it is utterly miserable, it's a completely hell, continuously hell, completely suffering. So that is what one would have. Someone saying both happy as well as unhappy. Sukha dukhi. Happiness is also there, unhappiness is also there. And then adukkama sukhi was the other group. So neither happy nor unhappy. So basically, it is the denial of the both happy and unhappy situation. So it is very much the upekkha, very much like the neither happy nor unhappy, adukkama sukha. So we can see, depending on the Vedana, the feeling tone, so they have four categories. Depending on the perception, they have another four categories. And depending on the spaces orientation, either finite, infinite, like that, so they have another four categories. And depending on whether it is rupi and arupi, that is material or immaterial, there are four another categories. So altogether there are 16 wrong views which they are talking about surviving soul after the death. Now that is why it's coming under the future, because all these 16 are talking about the future. So depending on that future view, they are coming up in different varieties. So ultimately there are all 16 types. So Buddha particularly ascertained, now okay, these are the maximum, you can't have any more. So he is coming up with all these possibilities, because one group may thinking one particular direction, one particular way, and they come up with one kind of a wrong way. Another group might think differently and they come up with another wrong way. So likewise, there are many wrong views. At a particular given time, one group may become quite highlighted in the society. So their followers may be more sort of accepted as telling the truth, or accepted as the most sublime, most correct, and so people start following them. So the problem is, now not only they themselves are following and having this particular view, so they preach, they even proclaim this to the other vast majority of the people, they also start believing this. So that's the kind of the drawback, or on the other hand, kind of a tragedy, where when people are having certain wrong view, they simply don't kept that to themselves. They want to spread it. They want others to believe it. They want others to accept it. So certain group start then accepting, so they becomes their followers. But there are others who don't want to accept, then there will be a conflict. So that's why the danger in this wrong views. So certain group, they are now believing it, they are strongly believing it, strongly adhering to it. But there may be others who don't want to, so there is a conflict now, so they are getting to fight now. So you can see even today how the whole world is divided based on these dogmatic religious views. Some are saying, okay, there is a God, some are saying there is no God, some are saying, okay, this God is finite, some are saying infinite, is immeasurable, limitless. Some are saying, okay, we have just one God. Some others saying, okay, there are many gods. Name of the God also different. And accordingly, different viewpoints are there. So certain groups are following it, and they are the ones who are even ruling the country, ruling a particular region. So they want to believe others, either by proper way or proper means, or even some hard means, they want others to believe it. So they are putting force, they are putting their power, and try others also to believe it, also to adhere to it. So this is a kind of a situation where even though spirituality needs to be making certainly a peaceful environment, now things are becoming completely restless, completely challenging, and even harmful environment. Now Buddha has seen this. So basically Buddha has seen all these 16 possibilities which are talking about conscious survival, and he understood its peril, he understood its danger, and so again he understood what would be the repercussions, the consequences of the people who are believing it, either even in this life or in the future life, what would be the consequences. So he understood further than this, some more sublime than this. So, but even he does not attach to that sublime understanding, that sublime knowledge. So that is the most important part of the Buddha's teaching, where he does not recommend to attach to anything, even to the teaching. teaching is very useful for one to understand, one to recognize the situation and accordingly live properly with wisdom, slowly, slowly abandoning everything. So that ultimately the mind has to become completely freed, completely liberated, attaching to nothing, not even to the teaching. So that's the most difficult part in a way, because teaching is something we start appreciating, we start sort of getting the benefit, and sometimes we can even attach to the teaching. But he, the Buddha, even does not allow that. He simply say, okay, you can use the teaching, but not for adherence, not for any kind of holding or grasping. Rather, it's a mere raft. So you have to use the teaching, even the Buddha's teaching, as a raft. So that is the simile that he is giving. It doesn't mean that we should not even learn it, thinking that ultimately we have to give it up. Rather, we should learn it, we should get the benefit, we have to properly use it. We need to understand all our existing hindrances in the mind, where we get trapped, how we get tangled, and all that through the teaching we can understand. According to teaching, we can practice. And as we are practicing further and further, so one may understand, okay, the benefit of the teaching is now internalized. So you are experiencing the benefits. It is merely superficial at the beginning. So you have heard certain teachings. Say, for example, you have heard about the five faculties, the faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, wisdom. So you have heard about them. But when one has getting into the practice, so you are slowly developing them and you are internalizing them. Now you can even understand, okay, in my mind there is faith available. In my mind there is a faith available. In my mind there is something called mindfulness available. It was not available previously. As a result of years of practice, now these qualities are very much rooted in one's mind. So, say, now the mind can be concentrated easily. You can maintain your mind consistently for a particular period of time. And as a result of that, now you are able to understand the reality. So, a fair amount of wisdom is there. It is not something gathered from a book or kind of mere contemplative, or we can say mere logic or reasoning-based sort of knowledge. Rather, it's a direct experience-based knowledge. So you have observed phenomena, you have experienced phenomena, observed phenomena, investigated phenomena with mindfulness and with wisdom, and accordingly the mind understood the reality. So kind of a direct experience based knowledge. So likewise, when one is into practice, slowly slowly all these teachings become available, tangible to oneself. And then it is not a superficial knowledge, it's not a superficial belief. Important thing is ultimately all these are helping to liberate the mind, to free the mind. So that's the interesting feature of the understanding. Now typically we may start learning various other subjects, mundane subjects, but it doesn't have the quality of the freedom. Rather mind gets stuck, rather mind gets trapped. Mind get somewhat burdened even. Mind become limited and you become trapped. And you want to memorize even. But interesting point with the Buddha's teaching is that this is a kind of a teaching where as you are practicing accordingly, so the mind has to feel freedom. Mind has to feel peaceful. Mind has to feel tranquility. And depending on how much we have realized, so to that amount, the freedom has to be experienced. So ultimately, when someone becomes an arahant, so his mind is completely freed, holding on to nothing, not holding anything. So that's the interesting part of Buddha's teaching, where he say, emphasize, yatha bhuta jnana dasana nibbidattam. So this seeing things as they truly are, so that knowledge is for disenchantment. So when we have such knowledge, so it's basically, rather than promoting grasping, it's promoting relinquishment. It's promoting non-grasping of the mind, non-attachment of the mind. So the mind becomes slowly, slowly independent. And then there are another 8 future-related wrong views. And there Buddha explained, again it is after the death, there is a survival, but it is non-conscious. It is not conscious. So previously there are 16 we talk about the conscious survival, but here it is mentioned about the non-conscious survival. Santi bhikkhave eke samana brahmana uddhang aghatanika asanyivada uddhang aghatang asanying attanang panyapenti attahi vattuhi. So there are 8 such possibilities that different people contemplating about the survival of the soul, they are simply saying, okay, it is non-conscious. So there are such 8 declarations, dogmatic views, wrong views that Buddha explaining now. They declare the self after death is healthy and unconscious and material. So here also we can see the form, the shape, tangibility coming to the picture. Rupi atta hodi, arogo parammarana asanyi nang panyapinti. So they are saying, okay, there is a survival, it has a form after the death, and it is existing forever, and it is, by the way, unconscious, asanyi. So then they are saying, another group, of course we can understand what are the other possibilities now. Another group is telling, okay, yes, it is asanyi, it doesn't have consciousness, it doesn't have any perception, and it is continuous, but it doesn't have the form either, which is arupi. Arupi atta hoti arogo parammarana asanyi tang panyapinti. It is immaterial. And another one is telling it is both. So it is material as well as immaterial. So with respect to form, when they are talking of the form, so these are the 4 possibilities. One group telling it is, yes, they have a form. Another one denies it, telling, no, it is no form, it is immaterial. Now another group is telling it is material as well as immaterial. Another one is telling neither. Neither material nor immaterial. Now, these are the 4 possibilities. Buddha say, okay, with respect to non-conscious survival. And now, how about its space? Now, here, actually, what we have discussed, the 4 possibilities are with respect to the form. Now, how it is oriented? So, is it having sort of limited orientation, kind of finite Atta, finite soul, or is it infinite? So depending on that, so there are another 4 possibilities. One group is telling, okay, it is Antava Atta Hoti. So this non-conscious soul, which is going to be survived, has a limit. So it is experiencing a limit in the spaciousness, in the orientation, in the space. Another group is saying, no, it is ananta, it is limitless, it is infinite. Another group is telling, some part is finite, some part is infinite. So it is both finite and infinite. Another one is telling, neva anta na ananta. Doesn't have a limit, doesn't have a no limit also. Basically, they deny both. So accordingly, there are 4 categories talking about the spacious orientation. Now altogether there are 8 such post-death, after the death survival, talking about the soul, and but it is unconscious. Now previously we discussed about the conscious survival, so that's why it came to another 8 talking about the perception. So when it is conscious, they can talk about the perception, and again they can talk about the feeling tone, how they feels like, because it is conscious, and how it is, how it is perceiving the whole world, since it is conscious. So there are 8 additional ones coming to the picture, but here actually point is completely unconscious. So they now talk, not talking about the feeling tone, nor about the perception, so only the orientation in the physical sense. And so here also Buddha mentioned, okay, these are the 8 such possibilities with respect to non-conscious survival, and more, there is nothing more than this. So whoever talking about non-conscious survival can only talk up in this, either one of them, either they can talk about either one of them, touching one of them, or many of them, no more than 8 of these. So here also Buddha has understood the peril, Buddha has understood the drawbacks of these wrong views. If people are adhering to these, so they can even argue, they can even try to convince others, they themselves get adhered to it, and they can come up with various other teachings oriented towards this kind of a wrong view. So basically we need to understand that when such a group of people having this wrong view, so accordingly they have their other, whatever the moral conduct or their way of living or their other teachings, all are very much like aligned with this wrong view. So this wrong view is not a mere one statement. So according to this wrong view, they have the whole conduct being oriented. That's why sometimes Buddha points out, say when you are planting a seed, so all the fruits become completely conditioned according to that seed. So if you are planting a mango seed, so the result will be the mangoes. So the all the extracts that it is taking from the earth, all the water it is extracting, absorbing, so all ultimately become mango fruits. So accordingly everything is changed, accordingly everything is oriented. So similarly, when a particular group has a certain wrong view, so all their teachings, all their behaviors, all their workings, either through the body, speech or mind, all are very much targeting, all are oriented depending on that particular direction, ultimately leading to that particular direction. So that is their belief. So these are not merely mental then. So it is the mental direction ultimately they are talking, but all the physical conduct is now oriented towards that mental wrong view. All verbal conduct, whatever they are speaking, whatever they are talking, whatever they are writing, speculating, or whatever they are discussing, all are very much oriented towards that wrong view. And whatever their thoughts, how they are speculating, they are imagining, all that are very much like oriented towards that wrong view. So therefore, physical conduct, verbal conduct, as well as mental conduct, all that 3 conducts are oriented towards this particular view. So therefore, these views are very much like the governing factor of one's behavior. So that's why people are even killing each other, depending on their wrong view, pertaining to their wrong view. So they have no mercy. So you know that what's happening today, recently hundreds of people being killed in Russia, so depending on the wrong views. And people have wrong views and they are trying to inculcate that forcefully into others. In certain other countries, they have taken weapons even to, by force, to enforce that wrong views, to govern others according to their adhered views. So everything becomes very much like oriented towards that wrong view. They are strongly adherent to it. Either hook or by crook, they want to now enforce it to the others also. Others also have to somehow believe it. So we can see there are repercussions, there are sort of misfortune ultimately going to have, and people who are adherent to it, believing it, observing it, and what is their fate, what is their say future birth. So that is, Buddha has seen how these wrong views taking them to a kind of a miserable future lives, whoever is following it. So Buddha has seen the peril, Buddha has seen the dart in these wrong views. So he has seen more than that. So he has seen more sublime than these views. And even that understanding he never grasped. So as a result of that, he is able to completely liberate himself without attaching to anything. These monks are those other matters, profound, hard to see, hard to understand, peaceful, excellent, beyond mere thought, subtle, to be experienced by the wise. Now these are very interesting way that he is pointing out. So these are profound, so people can't easily understand. And again, these are hard to see. So when someone is stuck in a particular view, they can't see the others, other possibilities, because they take it for granted, or they strongly believe it, or they don't want to believe something else, they don't want to consider anything else. They strongly say, okay, my view is the correct view, everything else is wrong, all false. So that is how they are strongly adherent to it. So therefore they can't see it. And again, it's difficult to understand something beyond this. And when someone is able to overcome all these wrong views, abandon all these wrong views, so the state of the mind, so that understanding is more peaceful, more excellent, and it is beyond mere thought, beyond mere logic, atakkavachara. And again it is subtle, and again one needs to experience that. It is not again a kind of superficial type of imagination, rather it has to experience by the person. And that Buddha has realized by himself. So that is another important thing. So we are trying to understand, because the light is given by the Buddha, direction, the guidance is given by the Buddha. So we are trying to alleviate all our suffering, eliminate all our wrong views, because Buddha has shown the path. But for him, there was no one. He himself has understood it. So that is where we need to understand his sort of supreme sort of teaching. So what a kind of teaching that he understood, and how he has proclaimed, how he has preached. So therefore, as the teacher, so we need to have that proper understanding why his teaching or why his presence is so important. Because when Buddha was not there in the world, so for eons, so people are trapped in various these wrong views. It may go from one generation to another generation, from one lineage to another lineage. So when particular group start believing a particular wrong view, so it's not only limited to that particular generation. They may taking it to another generation. So likewise, inherited by many others, it's going on and on. And all that Buddha understood, given up everything. And if someone is praising him properly, so these are the sublime points that Buddha to be rightly praised. So that is the sort of concluding remark that every time he is making. And so altogether now we have discussed 24 wrong views pertaining to the future, and some more to discuss. And for today I will stop here. And now I like to open the session for discussion.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu.
Yeah. So
you have a question there, Bhante?
Yes. There's a question coming from Venerable Dhamma Vijita. Yes, please go ahead.
Yes, Bhante. Thank you. So I was reading along with the Bhikkhu Bodhi commentaries in another book on the sutta, and one thing that he brought up was that the reason we cling to a self-view is that taking a self-view gives a sense, sensual gratification,
mm-hmm.
just a feeling of a good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it seems that that is because we're ultimately unsure about our future, and so we're clinging to some form of security
mm-hmm.
For ourselves.
Mm.
And clinging to a self-view brings suffering. When we cling to anything, it's suffering. And the person who clings to a self-view can sense the fear that I am on shaky ground.
Mm.
And they feel, I mean, I think there's a sense of fear just in clinging to some idea
mm.
and trying to prove mm. that we're going to be, some fear there in clinging.
Mm.
So the person clinging to a view feels an anxiety that I'm caught
mm.
and that ultimately I'm going to lose.
Mm.
Is there some, as far as self-view being sort of a sense gratification, is that something that you could speak on?
Mm-hmm. So self-view or the personality view, is Sakkayaditti he's talking, or Sakkayaditti actually is the very much like the base here. So Sakkayaditti promotes wrong views. So someone believes, okay, there is a soul, there is I, there is a person, there is an individual. And on the other hand, now when someone is attached to the form, the body, and also they still believe, okay, there is this body is mine, or this body is myself.
Mm-hmm.
Or when one has certain idea, so they strongly hold that idea, or say this is my idea, so this is my view.
Yeah.
So a sense of I again being promoted.
Yeah.
And when someone has done a particular activity, okay, this is something I did.
Yeah.
So with respect to that activity, one start possessing or having some relationship to that activity, or claiming this belong to me,
yeah.
this is my creation, like that. So all that actually promotes the self of I,
yeah.
the sense of I. So
yes.
kind of a personality view is promoted.
Yeah.
So as you said, a personality view again, on the other hand, being promoted when I have a strong view, a wrong view. It may be wrong, but when I have something to believe,
mm-hmm.
it is also giving, as you said, a kind of a safety, a wrong perception of safety. Say, okay, I'm believing on God. Okay, God going to save me ultimately. So he's the one ultimately saving me. He's the savior.
Mm-hmm.
So I am believing it, so okay, I am just really moved. Ultimately, he will take care of me.
Yes.
So I am just a sort of weak person and feeble person, feeble character, but he's there, so I believe in him, I trust him, and so he's going to take me out of the suffering. So it's a kind of safe, based on the safety, as mm-hmm. you said.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe different, based on different other possibilities also. But safety is one important factor. So we internally feel unsafe. We internally feel unsafe, and we feel lost in the universe. So we don't know the direction. We don't know how to overcome the suffering.
Yeah.
And so we attribute the survival to another person. Therefore, he is almighty. So he is a strong guy.
Yeah,
more than me.
There's some safe place.
Safe place.
Like, so if we're doing jhana meditation and we feel some safety and happiness there,
mm-hmm.
we want to stay there.
Stay there. Mm.
And we create a view out of that.
And that's also possible. That's why they ultimately conclude. Actually, those actually we can discuss later, because there are Ditta Dhamma Nibbana also. There are another five views explained by the Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, thinking jhanic experience is something safe, something as the Nibbana, as the survival, is another possibility available. We are currently, while I am in the Rupa world, in the material world, I feel unhappy, I feel in the sense world, I feel unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
But when I am shifting myself to the jhana world, say, material jhana or immaterial jhana, I feel safe, maybe. So therefore, I am cultivating them, I am trying to adhere to them, and I am absorbing them, and basically, I expect that to be a kind of an eternal experience. So that is what happens in the, say, for example, Alara Kalama. So he and the group believed basically, okay, this nothingness is a very beautiful experience. It's completely immeasurable, limitless experience. And again, I have no any kind of friction while I am there. I feel completely safe. So I feel, therefore, this is the Nibbana, this is the complete freedom. So they believe that, they adhere to that. And after the death, so they can be reborn onto that, and they can stay there for eons. So that's why the immaterial jhana basically are with the long lifespan. But the Buddha seen, but this is also not permanent, isn't it?
Yeah.
So even though these people believe that to be permanent, but Buddha say, okay, this is also not permanent. And you can see certain discussions like with the Baka Brahma. One Brahma called Baka. So he believed he's eternal. His lifespan is limitless. He's living forever. So I myself is eternal. So he had such view. So Buddha has to approach him. I think Buddha is the one challenged him. So because as we already discussed in certain one Sasatavada, one eternalism. So we can remember that. Can you remember that one person now, during the destruction of the whole world system, so people are reborn into the Abhasara Brahma Loka. And from once they stay there, one guy out of that getting to reborn into a new empty Brahma realm. He's the first comer.
Yes.
He's a newcomer there. He's the first visitor there. So he's reborn there, but he's with splendor, and so he see no one there. So he believe, okay, I am born here. I am the owner of this world. I am the one created this. And then other beings also coming there, but they are with short lifespan. So they also understand, okay, now I am going to die, but this fellow is there before me even. So he should be a mighty god. He should be more powerful. He should be the ones created us. And now I passed away from there. Now I'm being reborn in the human realm. Now I have the possibility to see the past lives. I still can the existence of that Brahma.
Yeah.
So he is the Almighty. He is the creator. So, but I am impermanent. So where this Ekaccha Sassatavada comes to be. So I myself and certain others are in the human realm. So we are impermanent. We are weak. But there is one guy over there, the Mahabrahma.
Mm-hmm.
So he's eternal.
Yeah.
So likewise, people come up with various things. And then I have, of course, a feeling of safety if I can be with him.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to die, I'm going to suffer. But he's not. He's eternal. He's not going to die. He's living forever. So if I somehow be with him, okay, I'll be safe. So they are formulating a teaching, okay, how to become that Brahman. So you being with that Brahman, you being with that Mahabrahman, so he's the eternal one, he's the sublime one. So now I am formulating certain rituals, certain practices, either to be with him, either to satisfy him, either to get his attention, either to get his blessing. So all sorts of religious practices we can come up with to satisfy that Mahabrahma, to be with that Mahabrahma. You are coming up with a methodology to be with that Mahabrahma.
Yeah.
All these possibilities are there.
Yes, Bhante, and also when we create a view and then we
spread it,
espouse that, and people join us, then we feel some
we also feel exactly. When I have more believers, more followers.
Okay.
And I also being highlighted. Okay, I am the teacher. I am the one teaching you. Okay, I know it is correct. I know I am quite confident. Still, you are not confident. Okay, just follow. Then ultimately, you become confident also. And again, I am being venerated for having a more connection with the Brahma. So I am the mediator. you know. So yeah. That is also there, no?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Say a certain religious group is there, certain religious, say, how to say, the lay group is one follow type of group, another certain venerated group is there, so they have a direct link to the Brahma or to that Almighty, or they have a more closer relationship to them.
Okay.
So these people, other people don't have such relationships, so they start believing them and they start practicing what they are telling. So that is what the Brahmins do. So Brahmins simply say, okay, we are being born from the mouth of that Mahabrahma. You guys are coming from the, you know, you are not like that. You are below us.
Yeah.
So that is how they are coming up with this caste system.
Yes. So I can see the real relevance of this with our present life.
Mm, exactly.
And even just people on the everyday level, you know, we have our views and we have friends because of our view.
Mm.
And so that's also supporting, giving us some gratification,
mm-hmm.
having a view.
Exactly. Actually, view is something we can become, we can of course grasp. So that's why ditti upadana. So there are four categories of upadana, four categories of grasping. The first one is kama upadana. You know that you are grasping something, sense objects. So you love beautiful flowers, beautiful sight, so you grasp that.
Yeah.
Beautiful music, you grasp that. Beautiful taste, you grasp that. So likewise, the five sense cords are there, which is possible to grasp,
yeah.
And what we call the panchakama upadana, the kama upadana. And not only that, even the status and social status, social different, say your reputation, all that are the possibilities, but still related to this mundane sense world,
yeah.
Where you have the kama upadana. And then you have ditti upadana. Kama upadana, ditti upadana, attavada upadana. What else? There are four kama upadana, ditti upadana, attavada upadana. That's another one also, I think. Anyway, four categories are there. So ditti upadana is another category that we grasp the ditti, the wrong view. Different views are there, so we are grasping that. And the last one is the attavada upadana, where we as a person, as a self, so I have an adherence to that self. So I believe there is a self here, and that self is something I am strongly holding.
Yeah.
I want to survive, I want to continue as a self.
Yeah.
So actually graspings have interconnections. Say,
yes.
When ditti upadana is there, it is promoting the attavada upadana also. So when I am holding a certain view, as you said, it is highlighting me. It is highlighting me. The others are venerating, others are praising, others also now believing. So I have many followers. So I become someone.
Yeah.
So I am become the, you know, more important person than the others. So the attavada upadana can become more stronger in such a person. So that's why you can see. So that can even happen at the Buddhist level.
Yes, and if our self is getting raised up,
exactly.
then we may get
more
material things, and
exactly.
We enjoy more sensual, you know, kama.
Yes, yes. So that's why Buddha was so careful to give the Vinaya, give the moral conduct also to the monks.
Yeah.
Because when they are talking some high teachings and, you know, some special spiritual aspects, so others may start venerating, others may start giving you special benefits or, you know, material benefits. And if you been trapped in them, if you get caught up with them, if you start satisfying or gratifying your senses with them, then ultimately you get caught. So that's why Buddha particularly highlight the danger in the labha sakkara, about the gain, fame and all that. So he particularly say, okay, this is a danger. This is a danger for spiritual life. So basically you can see in what many directions that Buddha has seen the possibilities.
Yeah.
So even the spiritual group, how they can get caught. Even in the Buddhists say, you know, we as the Buddhists, we as the monks, so how we can get trapped. So as when we are teaching, when we are following, when we are practicing, when we are meditating, so one possibility is that we get a certain view and we can get trapped. And that's why we need to know all these possibilities, what are the possible traps available, and if I am being trapped, so I need to release from that. I have to, in that sense, I have to be more humble, more approachable, and I am listening to others, I am ready to correct myself. That kind of a humility has to be with me. So likewise, I have to maintain a kind of a flexibility in myself, rather than strongly adhering to something. So my understanding of Dhamma and your understanding of Dhamma might be different. But we need to discuss, to come up with where we have gone wrong. Which one is more sublime, which one is more correct, according to the Buddha's teaching. So that's why, so the discussion is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, when we are being highlighted or when we are being venerated and when we are being gifted by a lot of material things, how can we avoid grasping to them? So likewise, I mean, it is quite relevant to the whole, Brahmachari life, to this monk's life. So how even the monk's life, even today's terms, how we can get trapped.
Yeah.
So, as you said, so when we have a certain strong view, it can give us the sense of safety.
Yeah.
Interesting, yes.
Thank you, Bhante.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions on your side, Bhante?
No. Yeah. Yes, another question, yes.
But I have heard that it's the same that even the arhats, they get many gifts and all, and when they traduce them, they also can't get the full benefit of being arhat.
Yeah. That yes, in the sense that Buddha sort of warned. Buddha even warned even to the arahants, okay, if they are now actually he is talking in general about the labha sakkar, about the gain and fame and all that. He is taking a particular separate section is called Labha Sakkara Samyutta, the Samyutta Nikaya, where he is again and again repeatedly with lot of similes, he is explaining the Sangha, okay, what are the perils, what are the dangers in this gain and fame. And one way he is further pointing out, even for an arahant, this Labha Sakkara, this gain and fame could be a danger. And then the people would, Venerable Ananda, some other monks are asking, so Bhante, how it can become a danger for the arahants? Because arahant is a fully enlightened being. So how can he get into a downfall? So Buddha say, no, he is not getting into a downfall from his understanding. Rather, he can't enjoy this blissful or whatever this, unworldly kind of happiness. Because he has a lot of other engagements, you have to satisfy others, you have to teach others, or you have to deal with others. So, because others are coming to you and they are venerating to you, keeping you on the pedestal, so you don't have your enough seclusion. So, Buddha, therefore, even for the arahants, he has warned, so be sort of careful of all this. Because you may not be able to enjoy while you are here what you have understood. You have very limited time to be with yourself, because many other, this material, tangible benefits are very much like trapping you, taxing you. And so you lose your time. You don't have enough time to, for your own understanding to experience. Something like that. So that's why we can see Buddha has given a very interesting simile in that sense. Not really simile, a kind of an example in that sense. So all of a sudden he go for, okay, I am for 3 months, monks don't come to me. I am not going to teach you for 3 months. So don't come to me. I am going on the village Pindapatha, or I am appointing one monk to take me the Pindapatha and offer me. Others are not prohibited to come and ask me any question. I am on 3 months continuous seclusion. So Buddha. Now you can see, I mean, so he has given an example. So that's very, very interesting, and we can argue, okay, why Buddha want to take such kind of a vacation? So he has done the whole thing, and why not he is explaining each and every moment so that other people would be benefited, and so that he is using maximum of his time. Why is he taking vacation? So one can argue. But that is the teacher. You can see, I mean, what a kind of example that he has given. So even he stopped teaching to anyone during that 3 months. So very beautiful.
And it's setting an example.
Setting an example.
You know, this is the way to...
For the future.
And for the example for others.
Exactly.
To see.
Exactly.
You know, otherwise everybody would just... Stop meditating,
and they don't have enough time for themselves.
He was giving the full example of his teaching.
Exactly. So he being the most compassionate one, so he taking a seclusion, he taking a vacation, and he being with by himself, is giving us a strong message, isn't it?
Yes.
So I mean, so he's
the teaching in itself.
Exactly. That's a teaching in itself. So you have to have a balance. Now the thing is, now when someone is too much involved in the conventional sense, conventional realities, conventional, you know, matters, so he can easily get absorbed to that.
Yeah.
So you don't have enough time to be with the sublime teaching, to be with the higher training, because you are being consumed by all that materialistic, all that, you know, the mundane kind of activities, conventional kind of realities, and you are completely deprived from the, you know, supramundane kind of understanding, because you either don't have time, and your mind being completely trapped, your mind being completely occupied. So that's a huge danger. So that's why we need to have a kind of balance. What is the balance? Can I do this without falling down, without going through a downfall? So, what is the balance? It doesn't mean that you are a completely selfish person, you are not doing anything, you know, something like that. That's also wrong. So that's, you are going to the other extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But how to balance both these? So that's why Bhante Dhammaji used to say, actually according to the Buddha, karunaya apagamanam, panyaya upagamanam, something like that. There's apagamana and upagamana, there are two words. I can't exactly remember. So through the compassion, he is teaching the Buddha, the teaching, and he is going to village Vindapatha, he is going for other, whatever the activities and everything, that out of compassion. But with the wisdom, he is going to the control, he go to the seclusion. He either by himself meditating, or he is completely not participating into teaching, he wants to be secluded. So likewise, so his timetable is very well adjusted, so that he himself has enough time to be with himself. That's very interesting. Yeah. Okay, back to you, Jennifer.
All right, thank you, Bhante. I'd like to invite Geshan for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Guru and Saranai Bhante, I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
Excellent. So, my first question is, if you don't mind, would you be kind to explain what is the Yathabhuta Jnana? I think I have heard many times in the context of sutra, mm-hmm. and then I also sort of have a somewhat vague idea through the comparison, but I don't think I have fully understood the phrase.
So basically now Yathabhuta Jnana Dasana basically refers seeing things as they truly are. So that basically, in order to do that, first of all, we need to have fair amount of mindfulness. Now this is not a superficial understanding merely by reading books. Rather, you are experientially understanding. With true direct experience, one needs to have this true knowledge. So first of all, therefore, we need to develop mindfulness. And as we are developing mindfulness, your mind get concentrated. Now you are able to maintain a fair amount of concentration. And then, say, you are able to maintain certain balance. You are able to maintain a balance in your effort, then only you are able to understand things. Now, say for example, you are practicing Vedana Anupassana. Now, in order to understand, practice Vedana Anupassana, you need mindfulness. Maybe using Anapanasati or mindfulness on rising and falling through walking meditation. So, you are developing a fair amount of mindfulness. And as you are developing that, slowly you develop concentration also. Now, your mind stays longer on a given object. So, now you understand, okay, unlike before, now mind has fairly restrained. Mind has capacity to stay on a particular given subject, particular given object, continuously for a considerable period of time. Now its concentration is also there. Now you need to properly balance your effort. If you have too much effort, that has to be reduced. If you don't have enough effort, then you might fall asleep. So you need to do a proper balancing. And when all that is satisfied, now you can recognize various feelings. It may be pleasurable feelings, it may be painful feelings, it may be equanimous feelings. So previously when there are, say, pleasurable feelings, you easily get absorbed in it. You easily get attracted to it. On the other hand, when there are painful feelings, you easily get repulsed from it. You may hate it. And you ignore the equanimous feelings. But now you are developing a capacity to non-judgmentally observe all these three categories of feelings: pleasurable, painful, or equanimous. Now, when you have that capacity, now you have a better opportunity to see their true nature, how these feelings are arising, how they are changing, how they are passing away, what are their different possibilities, how their intensity being fluctuated. And what's the nature of the pleasurable feelings, nature of painful feelings, nature of equanimous feelings, you are thoroughly investigating. So that investigation part, Dhamma Vichaya part, is now being developed. And as a result of that, now you slowly convince, okay, they are impermanent, they are transient, and they can't give lasting happiness. They are unsatisfactory. And they are beyond my governance, beyond my governability, beyond my control, and intrinsically they don't have any substance, any soul, anything, any core, anything eternal. Intrinsically they don't have. So likewise, this is the understanding that you are getting. So this is what we can say, seeing things as they truly are. So you are seeing the true nature of the feelings now. It's a kind of a conviction now. It's your own understanding now. It's not mere belief anymore, that you have thoroughly seen it. You have thoroughly understood it. Now, I only given the example with respect to feelings. Similarly, you need to have thorough understanding about the forms, about the rupa, about the perceptions, about the sankhara, about the formations, and not about the consciousness. So all that is, we can say, the vipassana in a way. So that understanding what you are gaining is actually the understanding of the true nature of all these conditioned phenomena. And probably you can even get into the conditionality, how all these different phenomena are dependently arising. So likewise, you are getting to even to the Patisamuppada. All that we can say as the Yathabhuta Jnana Dasana. The important thing of this Yathabhuta Jnana Dasana is it is, rather than promoting grasping, it will promote detachment. It will promote non-grasping. It will promote relinquishment.
Yes, thank you so much. That was very good. And I think I have a good understanding from what you just described, Bhante.
Yeah.
My second point was about the bringing the attention to the Anapanasati Sutra, because the sutra itself, what you have delivered some time back,
mm-hmm.
and I have been listening over and over whenever possible, simply because the more I listen to it, and I feel that it's like I'm learning something new in there, some that I didn't sort of experience while I, but whatever that I have experienced through meditation,
right,
and then when I listen, when you sort of talk about that particular instant, the incident that I have experienced, and then I realize, oh, this is exactly what that means.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like peeling an onion, I guess, trying to sort of find out as well. The more I think with that type of an understanding, I believe that one have to sort of create much more discipline, I guess, and something which is very difficult for in this, you know, the life that what we are in. So I'm kind of puzzled sometimes how to sort of navigate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically, I mean, you can slowly do it rather than immediately, you know, trying to strictly adhere to something. So allow the mind to slowly mature. That's why Buddha has highlighted in the Ogatharana Sutta. So we can't go in a straight line. So sometimes we need certain amount of flexibility. The mind has to be considered like a small child. So when we are restraining a child, so we can't be, we can't use only the strict mechanisms. Sometimes we have to praise him once, sometimes we have to, you know, gratify him, sometimes we have to praise him. So likewise, it's a kind of a gradual progress one has to have. And because if we are too much struggling, if we are too much going through some strict asceticism, that's also not going to help. At one point, things can break. So there's a, you know, moderate way we have to go through the path.
Yes, yes. One of the things that I have realized, so I'm sort of adjusting to that as well.
Mm-mm. Yes, yes.
Thank you so.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you so much, Mante. I really appreciate and this talk as well. Of course, I have another request. I'm also trying to... sometime back, I did some research on one of the sutras. I think it's the Parinibbana Sutra. Uh-huh. I don't know whether you have ever delivered that. I couldn't find in the library... of recordings?
No.
Is that something you have already delivered, which
no.
I am unable to search in
no,
the,
I haven't.
Your web?
No.
Or is that something that in the future you will be doing as well?
Maybe in the future we'll do it, but I haven't discussed Mahaparinibbana Sutta.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thunruvan Saranai.
Yeah, Thunruvan Saranai.
Looks like, Bhante, that may have been the last question on our side.
Okay, good. So then basically there are no more questions coming from my side also. So then we'll conclude the session. So today also we have gathered here and discussed Buddha's teachings and trying to learn from them, and so that our practice become more fruitful. And all this accumulated merit we'll share with celestial beings, all past relatives and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to understand Buddha's teaching and to free ourselves from suffering. And we'll recite the traditional verses. Ittavata ca amhehi sambathang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavata ca amhehi sambathang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavata ca amhehi sambathang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු ශාසනං ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ
සත්තං සමාගමෝ
හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු